They talk so much about PGC and everything. I didn't understand anything of what they said. I realized that it was important, but I didn't really understand exactly how it was done. And it took me quite a long time to really get it.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Stefan.
Hi, Stefan.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Audrey.
Am I getting that right? Is it Stefan or is it Stephen or?
It's, you know, we say Stefan.
Just say a few more ways.
Yeah, we say Stefan here.
Okay.
But in Swedish, we say Stefan.
Stefan.
Yeah.
I love people's different pronunciations of your name. It's wonderful. It's just a wonderful thing.
I can live with Steve also. I have had Steve.
You have had Steve.
Yeah, that too. Some people think that that is a good way of, it's a completely different name in my mind, but yeah.
Yeah, it is.
But as long as, you know, they are happy, I'm happy.
Yeah. First of all, who are you and why are you here?
I'm the CEO of Configura. I've been that for 6 years, and I'm here because we should have a conversation together about Configura and doing what I do and stuff like that. And it's, I don't know actually what I'm doing here, order to be perfectly honest. So just so you know, but I'm going to do my best. I have decided for your sake and Adam's sake.
We appreciate it, man.
That's good. I can't believe it's been 6 years.
Yeah, it has been,
Imagine that time's flown for you too.
Wild. Yeah, but the thing is, if you look back, you know, when I started in February 2000, which was probably the worst time
2020.
Ever. Yeah, 2020, February 2020. Worst time to start anywhere.
Yeah,
because, you know, you went in and you know, this is going to be super fun. I'm going to learn to know a lot of people. I'm going to get out of my home office. And suddenly I was there again for 1.5 years. So it was, and it's really hard, you know, but yeah. So if you look at that and everything that has happened in the world and at the same time, what we have done together, all of us in Configura, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
Even though, and time flies when you have fun, I think. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So as we covered in the opening part, Audrey usually actually handles like the survey questions, but she sounds a little funny. So we decided I was actually going to do, we always ask our guests like some survey questions. You haven't been prepped for these.
No, I don't.
Yeah. So there's going to be like 4 or 5 of them.
Go for it.
All right. And these are going to be pretty short ones actually.
Okay.
What's your favorite word?
Favorite word.
Oh.
Any language.
He's going to have to translate if it's Swedish, though.
There is a lot of...
or maybe one per language.
Oh, this was a hard one. Favorite word.
Look at that, man. The first one.
Maybe food.
Food? Oh, that's a good one.
I like food.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's good.
I like that. What's your least favorite word?
Oh, that's also food, maybe. But it's not food, but... this is hard because it's something that I don't like bones. So I would say bone.
Like bones in your food or just bones in general?
Yeah, bones. I don't like needles. Either needles I don't like.
So
I don't like the word needle either.
I get that.
Yeah.
What sound or noise do you love?
Oh, I love good music. So whatever give you a good beat or a good rhythm.
Okay.
I love music. Nice. I think, you know, and music that makes you move.
Yeah. You got any favorites?
That's the thing. It's like, it could be almost anything.
Oh, really?
And I don't know exactly what it is, but it makes me move.
Got it.
And it can be country, it can be disco, it can be, you know, almost whatever. Maybe it's a bit hard to get moved to a classical, but, you know, there are even classical music that is fantastic.
Oh, 100%.
That makes you move, but maybe sit still more, but you understand that moves you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my favorites is actually Mars, Bringer of War. I sing it to my daughter all the time. Da 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 da.
Da da da
da da da da da da da da. Yeah. What noise or sound do you hate?
Oh, squealing noises, like,
nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah. Those kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Styrofoam rubbing together.
No, but more that.
Yeah.
I have a problem. Most people obviously have a problem with that. So that would be my natural don't like.
All right. Two more.
Yeah, that's fair.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Mm-hmm. To attempt?
Yeah.
Okay. I had a dream I really would, if I actually studied in school and did all the things right, I would have built bridges and infrastructure.
Really? Like a civil engineer?
I guess it's a civil engineer, but actually, you know, constructing
like
bridges and roads and stuff that's going to be there for a long time.
That's cool.
I've always been fascinated by these, you know, really big infrastructure projects that is done. Also, you know, a properly big building, you know, the just looking how they construct them and how they get, you know, that to work.
Yeah.
You know, both from a practical perspective, but I don't know if I've been at the Burj Khalifa and you stand there and you look up or you go up and look down. It's like, how can they build this?
Yeah. Yeah.
To stand storms and all those things. So I'm so impressed with, there's people that know that does that. It's fantastic.
It really is.
Yeah. It is. It is.
Are you one of those people who, like, whenever there's construction, you just go out and sit and watch the machines and the people building all the time?
Yeah. I can actually look at that, and I like the progress. So in Linköping, where we live, for example, that's it has developed a lot. So just going around seeing what people do, I think that is, you know, what is gets built and impressed by the, you know, and those are small things. And then you can go to slightly bigger things that can impress you. For example, if you take the Singapore airport, the new one that they built out in the ocean and they built, you know, the roads out there and all the fantastic bridges that they have built, you know, going from that airport, understanding that nothing was there and they have built all that in one place, and then take a taxi into the center of Singapore and just look at the infrastructure they've built, you know. I get goosebumps when I talk about it. It's like fantastic.
Very cool stuff.
I love that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's cool.
So, and obviously I don't have the brain or the capacity to do it, but if I would, you know, then I would definitely have worked with something like that.
That's very cool, yeah.
Yep.
And then last one, what do you want your tombstone to say?
My tombstone? Great mentor, great father.
Wow.
Great husband.
I love it. I think that's great. Simple, but really impactful. Yeah, that's beautiful.
I think you still have some work to do. No, I'm just kidding.
I need to work on that. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Totally kidding. I just saw an opportunity. I had
to
go.
Do you have like a random, you know, questionnaire? So when you ask people?
The other.
Yeah. Audrey usually does it randomly. I picked my personal favorite this time.
Okay.
So I love that questionnaire because I think it's
they were handpicked for you.
Yeah. It's short.
I can ask ChatGPT to make another rapid fire one though for you.
No, I don't want any more. We can talk about something else.
Okay. I'm just kidding. You don't want just more getting to know you?
I'm fine.
Usually we've seen a theme here, and obviously the theme of our podcast is like design thinking. So this interview is with Stefan, obviously, but we wanted to talk about both the company and your vision of the company, of course, but also a little bit too about, like problem solving and like that kind of thing and like that perspective. One of the things that's really interesting to us though, over the course of this podcast, is we've found that most people in this industry didn't intend to end up here. They're happy here, but maybe, you know, when you were 6 or 7, you know, maybe you weren't sitting thinking, I want to be the CEO of a space planning software company. But I'm curious, like, was there some sort of vision, for you when you were younger to be some sort of like CEO or boss type person or a manager of some sort?
Yeah. Like, did you dress up in a suit, coat and tie for Halloween?
No. So I have never aspired to really be a leader. I have always thought I have been sitting in management teams basically since my mid-20s for the companies that I've worked in. And I have realized that I never want to have the role as the CEO. I succeeded for an extremely long time to avoid that position. But then, you know, the last job I had before I started here is like, I need to, you know, it was actually driven by moving to have my work in Linköping. So, and in Linköping, there is a limited, you know, number of roles that is senior enough.
Yeah.
Let's put it like that. And then suddenly one day a recruiter called me and said, you know, we have this great opportunity and we got your name. It's, you know, this company called Configura, and, you know, they have a CEO role open. It was the first time I felt like, okay, yeah, maybe, yeah, I can do that. And then I met and I started to talk about what we do.
Yeah.
They obviously, and I, it took me a long time to understand what we really do,
yeah.
but they kind of talked about the space and what we were doing, and going back to architecture, construction and those kind of things. It fascinates me. You know, I think it's fun, you know, and you know, even though it's furniture, not building, but still creation of something that is impactful and stays here. So I could, yeah, let's talk about it. But I never really wanted this kind of role because I think there's probably many other people that is better suited. But then when I got into it, yeah, this is actually fun, you know, from another perspective.
Yeah.
Well, I had also a very many, you know, what do you call it, backsides to it.
Yeah,
a lot of good things, but you know, a couple of things that I didn't, you know, think it was, but yeah. I didn't aspire to be a CEO. I aspired to be a game player all my life. That's what I wanted to be when I was young. And
you kind of did.
In a way. Yeah. Yeah. So my first job I really wanted.
Yeah.
Then it just happened for many years. And I've had, you know,
that first job?
I was a professional game player. What I did.
Which game was it?
I played a lot of different games. So we played Nintendo games. It was Nintendo. It was the 8-bit Nintendo. So that's when we started playing. It was called Famicom at that time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it was in Japanese.
Oh, yeah.
So you needed to be creative. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
But you also have some pretty significant achievements specifically related to Tetris, do you know?
Yeah, I was a good Tetris player. And I think it comes back to being good at mathematics and logical thinking. So I think it came from that. You know, I was really good during a period of time. I was breaking records, so I was very happy.
That's did
very
you ever cool. do like any like official competitions or anything?
I didn't do that for Tetris, but I did play in the World Championship in Nintendo. I did in Las Vegas a couple of times.
Oh wow!
Yeah, but I didn't win. There was probably people that were a third my age that was better at that time. So
sure.
Yeah. youth these days.
Yeah. But it was fun.
So
yeah.
From what you were saying, it sounds like you came to, or you got, there's a recruiter. There's an opportunity to learn about this place. There's obviously something that attracted you. You mentioned like the architecture type thing and the interest there though.
Yeah.
Was there anything about the culture or the company like outside of what we actually did that?
So I only met Göran and Johan.
Oh, really?
And,
okay.
And Harald during my, you know, before I selected to, you know, say that, yeah, I'm interested in taking this job. And
Johan and Göran are the founders, the living founders of the company.
Yes. And then we have Sune, who's not living, and I never met him. So I met Göran and I met Johan and I met Harald, but, you know, just briefly, but I spent most of the time with them. And I think, you know, the passion that they showed for what we do, they talked so much about PGC and everything. I didn't understand anything of what they said. I realized that it was important, but I didn't really understand exactly how it was done. And it took me quite a long time to really get it. But what I understand is that we had something unique that we did.
Yeah.
We had a strong sense of pride in what we do. The other thing that they talked about was, you know, the culture and the diversity of people that we employ, which I think is one of the most fantastic things with this company.
Yeah.
You can be who you are and you can be whatever you want to be. And as long as you feel passionate about whatever you do and can contribute, it doesn't really matter. And I love that with this company and the culture that we have.
Yeah.
That, you know, being truly inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I think it's awesome. One of my favorite things is like, just getting to know people from these wildly different cultures every single day.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
But it's also wildly different people.
Yeah.
If you look in our office, you know, the people in our office would never normally sit down and talk to each other,
That's
but they
true.
Do that when they are in our office and they work in our company, but they would never ever meet anywhere else. They would never even cross paths, I think, you know, to be honest.
No, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah,
so, absolutely. And I think it stems from Göran and Johan, who is wildly different from normal individuals too, in different ways. So, and I mean in a positive and seriously positive way. So That was very attractive. And also feeling that then I came, which was very, I was very different from them.
Yeah.
So maybe I could contribute mm-hmm. with something that wasn't in Configura. And I hope I have done part of that, at least in my role. So.
So I think that's kind of a good segue into, because we want to look at this from the design thinking aspect. Mm-hmm. We talk about it a lot in terms of development and like doing the things. But I think that the same structure can apply to looking at problems from any perspective, like from any level, not just about creating products or something. So the first stage of design thinking is empathizing. And so you're talking about, you know, coming in not knowing that much about this world. So what are some ways, and just even like taking a while to learn what PGC really is, which is, by the way, parametric graphical configuration. And it's just kind of, maybe one of you can give the, you know, the summary of philosophy.
I don't know
of PGC.
If we're brave enough.
I'm happy to do that if you want to include that here.
Yeah, do that. But I'll finish my question first before I forget it too. And that we can do both of those. But yeah, just learn coming in from the outside, having this entirely new world to empathize with, both within the company, people who don't know you, people who are vastly different in geography and in interests and everything. And then also our users is a whole another group to like the dealer designer world, the manufacturer world, the, you know, developer world, like all these different things. There's a lot of different groups to have empathy for. So just tell me how you approach that.
Well, I think, you know, the thing is that when you come in independent of job that you're going to do in a company, I think, and independent of level, I think the most important thing that you do when you start is listen. And really listen to what people is trying to tell you. And also realize that everyone explains things in different ways and they have different, you know, emotional connections to different things. They have also different ways of explaining the same thing and mm-hmm. also maybe have very different views of what we should or shouldn't do as a company, you know, in terms of how you move forward. The classic is when you come in, everyone tries to influence you immediately to do a lot of changes that they think is super important for the company. So the other thing that you need to have is, and I will almost use the swear word, but you know, a hell of a lot of patience. which is hard if you are an impatient guy like I am. The people that have know me, I need to really constrain myself not to be, you know, to be too fast. So, and I really struggled with that when I came on board. But actually there, COVID helped me. In a sense, because I couldn't go anywhere. So I had to do it, you know, structurally, you know, over Teams and talking to people and listen. So you don't have that, like, that push. You had to do pull and you could control it fairly good. But I think, you know, like in design thinking, really understand what you have. Then, to be honest, when you do that, when you were under COVID in Teams, it's really hard to really get the nuances of things when you sit like that. So with that, you know, when I started to think that I was ready to do changes, I realized 2 years later that I wasn't. So, you know, you learn. So, you know, you learn also that, you know, that maybe you think you know, but you don't really know until you know. And it's really hard to know when that time is because you don't know what you don't know. Yep. Kind of. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The hard decision is when are you, mm-hmm. when you know enough, to be able to, mm-hmm. since you don't know what you don't know, it's really really hard to know when you know enough. Mm-hmm. So, and it's really easy to have afterthought. I think it said, you know, less when everything has happened, you know, if you knew enough.
Then you knew the exact spot you should have done it.
But I think that can be applied also to if you think about what you do, Audrey, in terms of doing design and working with, you don't know when you know enough to actually be able to recommend a way of doing things, because maybe there is an angle that you haven't been exposed to or you haven't been thinking about. So. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And like with research too, and I've had this year where I'm like, I wanted to get more research and I don't know how I can get what I want to get. So, but I can't just keep extending this forever. So at one point, like, I know what I know. I have to move forward because we have to move forward, and we'll do the best with what we have. So that is definitely tricky of like, when do you know enough to, you know, stop the research and move on to the next step? So
yep,
that's a very good point. Do you have any specific examples of things that you were like, yeah, maybe thought I knew more here and then learned later? Maybe not so much.
So, no, but I think, you know, one of the things for those of you who were there on the, you know, we did a change in the organization pretty early. You know, that was, I think we needed to do a change in the organization because we were very siloed from a North American KL and Europe or Linköping perspective. But in hindsight, we should probably have waited a little bit more and worked through that before we started, because I didn't fully understand the complexity of what we did and how we operated as a company. But eventually we could, you know, trim it in with a couple of adjustments. We eventually got to a place where we're pretty good. And I think now we have achieved, you know, definitely a couple of years ago, we achieved what we wanted to achieve. But if I would have waited for 3-4 months more, maybe I could have done a more right thing from the beginning.
Yeah.
But it's extremely easy to look back and say, I should have waited a little bit longer.
Sure.
Yeah. The saying here in the state is hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So another kind of interesting thing that I think about with empathy, well, there's one kind of way to think about, like, in development or deciding things, you have the business aspect, the technology aspect, and the design aspect of, like, the intent and usability, I should say, the usability aspect. And you might guess the thing that's most important to me is the usability and the kind of desirability of what it does for the users. But the other two are essential, the technology and the business portion. And personally, I probably struggle the most with the business portion because I'm like, okay, I get it. We have to make money, but it sometimes feels like it gets in the way. But how do you balance that? Like those kind of the tripod of those three things in your decisions and how you approach things for the company?
I'm not thinking about it from the money perspective. I'm trying to think about it from the value perspective.
Yeah, which I think business doesn't just mean dollar bills.
I think when you think about usability, or you think about we deliver something to the manufacturing community and so on, I try to think value and what value and how do we create either, you know, a situation where the customer becomes more efficient, or in our case, become more accurate and save money, that you create a situation where they are more attractive, so to speak, and that can be a value that they sell more or convert more or whatever it is. And I think that is where you need to start. It's, you know, to identify, you know, the pains. And that is actually the same thing in an organization too. If you think about, you know, if you're going to change something, or you're going to employ someone, or you're going to, whatever you're going to do, you need to think about what value you want to accomplish by doing so, what skills you need to be able to make that happen. And then just build on that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I think about it from that perspective when we think about things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, start with the value, independent of what perspective we are looking at it from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and a value can be, you know, that we give our staff a better workplace. We can take what we have done the past couple of weeks. We have moved in this fantastic space that we are sitting in, not you, but we are, which is super great.
You guys are living in luxury.
but this is value that we have invested in. And I think we have accomplished exactly what we wanted to accomplish here.
Yeah.
When we came up here, I fell in love. And I said to Peter, when we stood here, I said that, you know, this is the place where I think our people want to go and want to grow. And even though it's, you know, I don't know if you know, but the designers and the way that they work with, you know, I'm not saying that they are expensive, but what they do for their end customers, it's super expensive to do.
Yeah.
More expensive than I ever thought I never knew how expensive a sofa could be, for example, until we bought one here. But that's
wild.
Obviously value, they say. But,
they say, according to the designers who sold it to me, it's very valuable. You can't have an office without it, apparently.
It's impossible. No. But you know, joking aside, I think this is... Mm-hmm. Another type of value, so to speak, and you have product value, and you have value for your users, and the functions that we design in CET or any of our other tools, so to speak, they create value. So I'm thinking value.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that's good. I think the other stuff comes from that. Then, you know, like if we have that as our point of like our goal, creating value, the other stuff comes together, I think.
You need a technology and you need a user experience to be able to create value.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And the more value you create, the more people want it. So like it's a win-win. And more,
and then
the more
what
good
do you know? You get more
world.
Money.
Yeah.
Then if you also then put a reasonable price tag to that, that corresponds well with the value, and that hopefully gives more value to the customers than they pay, then you're in good position to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, awesome. It sounds super simple, but it's really hard to do.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. It's really nice and fluffy.
In theory, it's so simple. In practice, it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, I mean, that also gets us into that. These are like such great transitions. I know I'm making it awkward because then I'm like defining, hey, this is a transition, but it was a perfect segue into that define phase of the design thinking, where you're narrowing down what is the actual problem. You know, you see a lot of things, you've listened, you've empathized, and then you're like, okay, there's a lot of pain points. But what's the underlying problem and kind of defining that? And so how do you kind of approach finding, you know, you, okay, I'm not saying this will happen, but like you started a new company and you find out everybody hates the way things are. This is not what happened, by the way, but theoretically everyone's like, oh, we need to change this. We need to change this. Da, da, da. Everyone's yelling at you. So you've listened, you've taken in all the feedback. How do you like get to the point of like, if we change this thing, a lot of that is going to be addressed.
Yeah, you need, and I think, you know, that it's really about, if you think about an organization as someone is going to beat me up for this, but let's say we are a production line. I don't know if you've ever seen an assembly line for a car, for example. It's a fantastic thing that is in harmony.
Yeah.
You know, the bodywork comes and the, you know, it marries with the engine and things just boom, bada boom, bada boom, bada boom.
Yeah.
So what you need to think about is, you know, what kind of, you know, so if that doesn't work, then, you know, something is broken. You need to find out where in that chain of events, where we cause the biggest disruption to be a company in harmony, delivering the value to our customers. So is that because we are not building the right products? Does it mean that we don't have the right quality? Does it mean that we are, you know, maybe not rightly equipped in our delivery organization, or, you know, and of course it's always sales fault. So, you know, are we selling incorrectly? Are we selling stuff that is not possible to do?
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, so you need to look through that and try to identify that, you know, you can always improve in all areas. So that's a given. In any given time, everyone can improve. But where is it that hinders the other people from, or the other, you know, to succeed in what they do? So identifying that, and then you need to be methodical on what you do. You cannot do everything at the same time because it's, you know, you're going to fail. So you need to decide, okay, we're going to do these, maybe three, four things, and, you know, just run with them and try to fix them the best you can. And hopefully you get the good results so you can move on and do something else. So. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the hard thing, because it's always an opportunity to do a lot of different things, and you need to be selective, and you need to accept the fact that you do make bad decisions and select the wrong things sometimes, and you got to live with it. You know, it's simple as that.
Well, and your decisions are like at such a higher scale. Like if I make a bad decision, let's say the worst thing that happens is like we release a bad feature that everybody hates. That's not great. That's a waste of time and money. But like life goes on. We build the next feature. I feel like your decisions are like much higher stakes and that's a lot more pressure that I wouldn't want. So that's got to be kind of tricky as well.
But if you think about it, it's actually the sum of all decisions that we make as an organization that defines if I succeed or not. So actually you're making good or bad decisions if you simplify it, it's my fault, but you know, really, if you think about it, if you get to nirvana as a leader, everyone is making independent decisions in the right direction that follows the way that we agree that we should go, and everything just plays in order. Now it's never like that, but you know, then it works. So I seldom do, you know, a bad decision on my own. It's like we do it together. And I think that is important to recognize that we actually, as a company, we succeed together and we also fail together. The main difference in having my role is that I have the responsibility when, you know, the last level of responsibility for the things that goes right and the things that goes wrong.
I remember I had one of the bosses in one of my former organizations, actually, he read this book from a Navy SEAL about management. And the Navy SEAL said basically like the success and failure of every decision belongs to the person in charge. It sounds like you feel that kind of way too.
Yeah. I don't feel like that. It is like that.
That's the
way it is.
Yeah.
And if I, as a leader, start pointing at the people around me to say that they always make bad decisions, you know, it reflects on me.
I gotcha.
Because I probably then not given the right instructions, or I haven't been, you know, clear on my expectations, or they are the wrong person for the wrong, you know, maybe the right person, but in the wrong place. And it's also my responsibility to move them if they are not in the right place. Yeah. So they actually have the prerequisites to do their job. Yeah. But we do this together. I think that is the main thing, is that we succeed, or we win and lose together, basically.
How is that like with kind of trying to communicate? This is the vision. This is the direction. So like you get to that idealistic, you know, we won't get there, but like that idealistic state of everyone is so clear on what we're doing that I can trust they'll make the decisions that go with what we're all working towards. Like, do you feel like that's been happening? Like how is that challenging? Just talk about the experience.
I think that the hard thing is with that is to accept the fact that it's kind of the 80-20 rule. You know, it doesn't matter how much you communicate. It doesn't matter how good your idea is. You know, in a very good scenario, you get 80% of the people with you. And you're going to get 20% of the people that tells you that it's the wrong thing to do, or it will not work, or, you know, or that doesn't understand what you want to tell them, even though you have tried to tell them in many different ways. I think that is the one thing that you need to accept. And if you can accept that not everyone will be with you on the decision, but if you do a good job in communicating, and by the way, 5 different times in 5 different ways, and you get 80% with you, you have succeeded extremely well. And you will never get everyone with you.
No.
And I would say that it's similar to design also. If you think about, you do something and you think about, this is the way I think the user should work with this. I think this is going to be a great experience. I can bet you that, you know, you will have maybe 70-80% of the users thinking that you did a good job, and the rest of them think that you're an idiot. And that's the way it is.
You should fire her.
It reminds me of when I brought up my example about you can't get 10 people to agree that ice cream is delicious. And Audrey said, that's ridiculous. And we were talking to Sydney Watkins, who was like, guess what? I'm number 10.
I almost kicked her off. I was just about to stop recording and be like, you are no longer welcome on this podcast.
But that's the way it is. No. But I think this is about, you know, people having, they have different views on things. They come in from different perspectives. I'm not saying that they're wrong, because they're most likely not. It's just that's the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's the good thing of us being different.
Yeah.
So if you think about this, if you come back to this, the diversity of Configura and so many different and you know, to some extent, odd people that works here, you know, you will also get exactly that. You know, you will get all these perspectives, and which is also something that educates you and develops you as an individual. So, you know, it's actually good. But I had the thought that with my excellent communication skills, everyone would follow my fantastic ideas.
And, you're like, and yeah, that's not the way it is.
I'm happy to get a couple of supporters in the leadership team. So,
You're like, hey, my three friends agree with me. So much.
One of them is my dog, Doris. She's always with me. Yeah.
Nerd Alert! This is a really special edition of Nerd Alert today. I'm actually joined, luckily, by one of our actual founders today, Johan Leerborn.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that if you've ever been to Experience, I think one of Johan's distinguishing features is actually his voice. I think you can tell when Johan's in a room.
Sounds good.
It does. It's very bassy. So, yeah, so during the episode, we had talked with Stefan about PGC. Yeah. And we actually had said that we were going to have him define it. And then we got so lost in our own conversation that we never actually got back to that. And then you were here. So I was like, hey, if he's here, he's one of the guys that came up with this whole concept. So why not give him the 2 minutes to talk about it? Mm-hmm. So that's the game plan for the Nerd Alert today. How are you feeling?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm ready, you know.
All right. So we'll start with the 2 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. So PGC is something that we came up with after, you know, learning that our software and the idea we did have was very special. And it was not really something else out there that could actually explain it or that we could use. In the short version here, to go quickly through what it really means, it's all about the look and feel of the software. It's about how do you interact and get responses. So PGC represents guidelines in how to make the software intuitive, immersive, and fast to work with. And then also PGC include that the design should be error-free using real products. That can be manufactured, installed, and serve a purpose. Because, I mean, one of the main things with what we do is that to actually work with real products and generate clean orders. So, I mean, if we fail with this, that will generate waste and time and material that is costly and ultimately that is unsustainable.
30 seconds.
So it's important to recognize that guidelines cover both how to create real products, content inside the computer, and how to interact with the content designing with the computer. So that's it.
Wow. Yeah, 10 seconds to spare.
Yeah, I mean, we should not overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
I mean, keep it simple.
Adam, you had a good question. I'm going to let you ask it. And I think it kind of fits with that ideate mindset of like ideating is about having all these ideas and just generating ideas. It's not quite getting into solving. But yeah, you had come up with this question, so you can ask it because it's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the problem space we're in has so many possibilities and so much that we could potentially do and think in so many directions to go. And like you were saying, you only want to do a couple of things, right? And so like, how do you make that final decision? I'm like, these are the things that we're going to do, or this is the stuff we're going to focus on, or that's the way we're going to try to do things. Is there a process to it? Is it unique for every thing that we do?
Small things or big things? If you think big things or...
No, I don't know. Why not both?
Then we can start with big things. Sure. You know, so if you think about the direction of the company and where we are going to kind of over time try to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, that's our long-term strategy that we do. So from that, there we do a lot of research actually, and we did a lot of market research in 2020 and 2022, trying to identify, okay, where do we have companies or organization and people that would really benefit of solving the problem that we can solve for them.
Right.
And it's not hard, you know, since Göran and Johan and the other founders, they have been everywhere selling our stuff, which means that we have tested a lot of different industries.
Yeah.
So for us, it was pretty simple to kind of, okay, we realized that, you know, this problem is obviously in commercial interior with, you know, the commercial furniture, especially the system furniture. You know, we are doing a fantastic job in making that more efficient. We have some success in, you know, in material handling, with Dematic and a couple of other customers. So it's obvious, you know, when we started to dig into that industry that, yeah, they are not that digitized yet. So, and there's a big gap and that we need to fix. So kind of going through that iteration, trying to figure out where to go.
Yeah.
And kitchen, we had a similar situation. We knew that there is a big need for design and also doing it, you know, efficiently and accurately because, you know, of margins and all those kind of things. So, but what we didn't think about was, you know, the geographical aspects of that. So we thought, in the first iteration of the strategies, we are going to go after material handling, kitchen and commercial interior globally, all countries, all over the world. Let's go. we were a bit naive and we thought that now we are going to box it in because this is really when we come to your question. It's like, okay, so we're going to box it in. So we're going to stop everything that isn't within material handling, kitchen or commercial interior. And we're only going to focus on that. And it's going to felt really good, you know, end of 2020, beginning of 2021. Now we have boxed this in. It's going to work fine. It took a year and we realized, oh, this is a big scope to go after. So what you do then is like you do that same iteration, you know, you evaluate every single, if you think about this like a nine field, you know, thing, you have like three regions, basically three industries. Then we started to point out, okay, so in this region, in this industry, what is the where do we have the best possibility to make it maybe break in or create value for the customers? Which segments are there? And then we started to figure out what we needed to do.
Yeah.
That when you have done that, which I think now we have refined to a state where I think, you know, it's a perfect scope for Configura. So what we now need to do is to make sure that we don't deviate from that. You know, that's the really hard thing. But when you know, someone comes with, you know, the carrot or the candy, it's like this is an opportunity and it's really easy to deviate.
Yeah.
Then the challenge is to say, no, we're not going to do that because we cannot scale. We cannot, you know, repeat that business. We cannot, you know, bring that value that we want to bring to our customers. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way you do that. You kind of narrow it down until you have, you know, the right scope.
Well, that's really interesting you put it that way, because I feel like in my position, I've actually, you know, fell into that trap a couple of times. That carrot looks awful tasty. And it's just like, oh, yeah, I can see all the value of that. And I can.
I think if you're a developer, for example, on CET, that carrot is there all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you
know,
you're building that you shouldn't build because you can.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's a very good idea that maybe you were extremely unlucky when you were thinking, but you know, it felt good at that time.
Oh yeah.
And I think that is the thing to create that structure and follow that structure. So, and you can apply a similar thing when you take the smaller decision. It's about narrowing it down to, okay, this is something that is reasonably sizable for us to be able to do. And it will create, you know, the effects or the value or the result that we want to create within the organization, for example.
Yeah.
And then we do that and then we see how it goes.
Yeah.
So to speak. And then we have bigger initiatives that we've also gone after that has been a bit crazy, but you know, we have succeeded also. So, But just so many of the decisions that we have made over the years, we have tried to be very structured about, you know, those that is actually larger investments or actually important for the company.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about little longer term, so to speak.
Sure.
But also, you know, I think one of the decisions that I made in 2020, 22, 23 somewhere, you know, when we had these performance problems on CET in the commercial interior, it was, you know, chaos. I couldn't sleep at night, but, eventually I came up, you know, and I met with a lot of manufacturers and a lot of users and everything. And I felt like, you know, we need to do something big. And the Endor initiative that we ran, you know, that started to form. And I'm going to translate this now. Otherwise you will ask me. So the Endor initiative is the initiative that we ran during 18 months to basically making sure that we reestablish our position in the commercial interior industry in North America. Because I felt, and I think many in the company felt, that we have lost touch with the industry, you know, that we weren't close enough with our users or manufacturers, that we weren't clear on how we wanted to create value today and into the future. And we did a lot of crazy projects and actually aligned all the organization running. And there was no analysis-based thinking. It was that was a hard decision. It's like, this is the most important thing we do. Yeah. And we had no idea if we did the right things. Now in retrospect, that was a good decision we made, and we have fixed many of the problems that we had on CET. The quality is better. The users are happier. We have, you know, a completely new product out there in a line, which was born from this. We have a content platform. We did a lot of stuff in 18 months. So I wouldn't say that, coming back to the decision making and strategy, not necessarily, if you think about some of the things that you take decisions on, should be structured and thought through.
Yeah.
Because they are costly in a long period of time. Mm. But I also think that some of the emotional decisions where you have a strong feeling or belief in something as a leader or as a team, that this is something that we need to, you know, then you should also act on those things. And often, and more often than others, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So you cannot calculate everything in an Excel sheet every single time. So you need to go with your gut sometime also. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm. And I think one good thing that came from that too is, like, now we can make more, we have a more established pattern of doing research, and we have a more established pattern of continuous research and the different levels of research. And of course, I'm talking about the research side, but also just the way that we make decisions is more informed. We're not doing as much of, like, this is a really cool idea. Technically, I want to make it, release it. It's, here's the problems that our users are having. What's the way we can solve that? Not just a cool thing you could do. So I think there's a lot more of that too. So I think all of that is, not necessarily quantifiable. You can't quantify how many hours you're going to save in the future by not wasting time on meaningless features. You can't quantify that.
No.
It is a number, but you can't calculate it. So I think that was a good thing. I think if anybody was saying it wasn't a good idea in the moment, they you're wrong. Hopefully they know now.
Well, there's at least 20% of people who thought it wasn't right.
Many people thought that, you know, I had a couple of people from product that didn't think that I was sane when we started. But you know, in the end, everyone rallied around the idea. And I think that is the key thing. And this is the power of this company also. If you have an idea that, in, you know, where people feel that they can connect, the engine that is available in this company to get done.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah. When we're aligned and we're ready to go, there's talent strong. Coming out of our ears around here, honestly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm curious about the people who didn't like the idea of Endor. I don't know if you can share, but I'm so curious.
You can't name names. Are you kidding me?
I can name a couple of names if we're going to have a really fun pod, if you want
to.
Hang out a couple of people.
No, but I am curious.
But it's really about, you know, the feasibility. So we, again, we come back to that. We have many different type of people, and the people that are really analytical in the way that they approach solving a problem and so on. It's hard to see the logic when there's no data available and it's just someone that screams that this is the way we're going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for them to accept. So I think it's a personality thing. While there was equal amount of people that loves that was like, I'm on. I don't know what we're going to do, but we are going to do it. It's going to be fun.
Sign me up.
Sign sign me up. We have many of those too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think you need both to get it.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah. Yeah. You got to get us sticks in the mud moving. Yep. And you got to get the, and once we do, we're all on board.
You want the skeptics though too, because they're going to offer perspective that you maybe didn't think about. And it doesn't mean you should stop completely, but it might alter the way you approach something. You're like, oh yeah, that's, you know, we almost forgot about that. So, I think it's super important to disagree with people. And that's why I'm friends with Adam.
I'm not going to say anything now. I'm going to be quiet.
No, but I think that's interesting too about the narrowing the scope, because I'm thinking about like the difficulty of like being a leader of a bunch of people who do have really strong opinions and have strong personalities. And like sometimes when you're shifting a strategy, as you're talking about with like the markets and the regions, like how do you communicate that without it being like, I feel like some people can see it as, oh my gosh, we failed and we're changing everything again. Whereas you're seeing it as, you know, we learned that we can't do all of these things. So we're, you know, honing. Mm-hmm. And I think it again goes back to design thinking, where we have the prototyping and testing aspect, which there's not this like, It's a little dangerous to call it prototyping and testing, but there is in a way like this iteration aspect to it that's maybe natural, but it doesn't always feel natural when you're sitting in a site meeting and they're like, wait, they're changing the sales strategy. And maybe that just sounds different or more significant to different personalities. So how is that for you in terms of communicating that and managing those different concerns?
So I think that is there. This is about communication and thinking about the different people that you communicate with. Some people want, you know, subjective reasons to why, and they want to hear the plan and what we're going to do instead and want to get motivated. Some people, you know, they want more data driven, you know, logical things that they can, you know, relate to. Other people, they look at it from a people perspective and how people will feel about this change. And that creates it. So, and we have all of those in our management team, if you think, and actually that is a good thing. So when we want to change something, we can get a little bit of, you know, not instability, but a lot of discussions in the management team from with all different perspectives. And for me and for Frederick, then that helps me a lot with the strategy. We need to cater for everyone's needs to understand the perspective that we're after, when we do a change.
Yeah.
But often everyone is agreeing that we need to do something, but you know, then we need to agree on what that something is. And you need to test ideas. So
yeah, of course. Yeah, I think we did it. We typically have one last question, actually.
Wow. This was fast.
I know. It goes by quick every time.
Yeah.
The question we always ask every guest is pretty simple. And it's basically, who, living, dead, reasonable, unreasonable, would you want to have as a guest on the podcast? In the industry, out of the industry?
In the industry.
In the industry, out of the industry. George Lucas was an answer, for example, at one point.
Oh, that's a hard one. It's a little bit dependent on what you want to, I guess, talk about. You know, if you think about it from a design perspective, or if you think about from a change perspective or leadership perspective, or.
I think I'd be interested to hear from like a leadership perspective who you might want to hear from. I think that'd be
interesting. I think I would have Barack Obama here.
That's the third time someone said his name.
Yes. And we really need to work on this.
I know.
that guy is impressive in his way of communicating, being humble, being down to earth, managing a situation where you are in not having the majority in any of the houses, you know, and at the same time try to navigate your political system that is complicated.
Oh yeah.
I do think that it's an impressive person, and it seems to be still extremely balanced and you know, in everything that he talks about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that
must be an extremely interesting person to me.
Oh, I think so. He also does a great job of being that, feeling like that guy you'd want to hang out, have a beer with, you know, play basketball
at the same time.
Yeah. And he orates so well, man. That guy's such a good speaker.
I'm going to be clear here. It has nothing to do with Democrat or Republican thinking. Yeah, I don't know from a sympathy perspective. It's just as an individual.
As a person.
Yeah. And that's what everyone said, basically. It's just like, man, I love listening to the Nature documentaries he does just to hear him talk because he's just such a good orator.
That too. Yeah.
Yep. If you want to listen to him on a podcast, he actually is a co-host with like a mini series with Bruce Springsteen. That was amazing. I mean,
I actually seen that was done. I haven't listened to it, but okay. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time out to hang out with us and chat. This was really awesome.
Thank you.
It always goes so quick. Honestly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you get what you wanted to get?
I think so.
Did I deliver according to expectations?
I think so. I had really low expectations. So I think, you really surpassed.
It's so great when you put that, It was a great podcast because I had so low expectations. Thank you. But that, Audrey, we will put that in the bank of that's the company we work in.
That
you said
say,
that on this podcast, I think we shouldn't cut it out. It tells me that you feel safe and it's a good environment to be in.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Safe enough to make jabs at the CEO. Awesome.
Good job, Audrey.
Good job, Adam.
Good job,
Stefan.
Thank you.